Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 102. I got a little messed up there. I'm not used to saying 102, 102. We're getting up there.
It's a lot of numbers.
We're getting up there. We're in Fortaleza, Brazil. John Morgan here. Cole Coffee is not with us, unfortunately. He is going on vacation tomorrow, so he did not make the trip down to Brazil. But you know, if we're in Brazil, of course, Fernanda Prachas, our Brazilian reporter, is going to be sitting around and hanging out and talking some MMA. How you doing?
I'm good. No frosty beverages for us today.
Well, I know, and that's a problem, but it's kind of the situation where we're in. We're kind of isolated over here, so frosty beverages will be consumed. Not right now. We have been grinding all day long. I'm not lying. I'm on about 90 minutes of sleep. You are on about probably 90 minutes of non-hungoverness at this point, so it's been a rough day.
Yeah, but we got through it.
We got through it. UFC Fight Night 106, Belfort versus Gastelum. Back in Brazil, it's been a while. I feel like back when we were coming down here like seven times a year, I feel like I was down here like every 3 or 4 weeks or so.
The last one was Sao Paulo?
Yeah.
When was that?
November, I think. Yeah, 4 months. This is event number 28 in Brazil. I've been to 27 of them. I just didn't go to the one way back in the day. But I did talk to our man John Anik earlier today. I think he's been to like 21 or 22 of them. So he's damn near Brazilian at this point.
Yep.
In fact, he said to you that at some point he wants to get the Brazilian flag tattooed on his body.
Yep, he did say that. He said he got protective of the country too.
Right?
So we need footage of that. That's all I'm saying.
He's starting to get a little Brazilian as well. And he's liking tattoos. He gets that 209 thing on there. Now he wants to start, you know,
loading
up.
That's how it starts. The tattoo itch. That's how it starts. You get the first one and then done.
He's got it. So if you hear him making any bets, he's basically throwing the bet so that he can get
the tattoo.
Yep.
We could get him drunk and convince him to get the tattoo.
That would be easy enough. John Anik and Brian Stan are going to be calling the fights on Saturday night. I bet if you could find a little bit of weed, he might get a – man's been known to toke a little bit here and there. All right, so we're in Fortaleza, second time in Fortaleza. Always anytime we're down here, I like to ask you kind of a little bit about where we are and what we're doing. Interesting, I guess, to note that the last time we were here, I think, was like 2013. That was Verdum and Big Nog.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Fighter Brazil 2. Great night of fights, if you remember. I think there were like 7 or 8 submissions on the card. It was phenomenal, but it was hot as hell.
Dude, remember Brian sweating, Stan sweating,
yes.
through his suit? It was just – I remember specifically the Americans being completely destroyed and miserable.
Yeah, it was because it's – we're basically like right on the equator here. We're on the northeast part of Brazil. We're basically like right on the equator. It's not really that hot if you just look at like raw temperature. Like I think it says it's like 85 degrees like all year long. But it's like 85% humidity too. And there's something about the sun that's just –
you're just sweating all the
it's
time.
Right there.
You got that glow around you all the time.
Yeah, it's brutal. But this one, we're in a brand new arena, like literally, which I don't understand this. It was built for the Olympics, which, as best I know, were held in Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, that's exactly.
But I guess this was like supposed to be some kind of training facility. Yeah. Although, as I was told, it was actually delivered late to the government or something like that.
That's Brazil for you, right there.
Brazil at its finest, right? But it is supposed to have air conditioning. I think they're actually installing the air conditioning right now. Like it's literally still being built. But so hopefully it won't be just miserable on fight night like it was. The fighters had to be miserable that night in 2013 with the lights because, you know, it's already hot under those lights anyway. And as bad as it was, so we don't have to deal with that this time around.
I can only imagine. To me, I have a problem that I forget everything that happens. Like, I barely remember that night. I remember Leo Santos. It was when he beat
Patolino.
And then he watched the fight with Santiago after it.
That's right.
Like a few things stand out for me in that event in particular.
That was a fun night. It was a lot of finishes, so hopefully we get something like that. Always ask you about like Brazilian politics and things like that. It's funny because I feel like when we were coming down here all the time, I guess the World Cup, you know, the Olympics, I feel like Brazilian politics, Brazilian policies were like part of American news, to be honest with you, because so much of the world was focusing on Brazil.
Yeah.
But I guess A, those things are gone, and B, we've kind of got our own political problems right now.
You guys are dealing with quite the situation out there. That's all I'm going to say about that.
So, are things any better now financially? I know it was kind of – it's been a recession, and that's kind of been an impact. Is it any better?
It's still a clusterfuck. And after they ousted the democratically elected president for no reason, essentially a coup, which was gross. Temer, the vice president, he took her place and he started like passing these measures that make people have a harder time retiring, like just everything that benefits the rich and just fucks the poor even further. So it's kind of like it's a bad spot we're in. And this guy called Bolsonaro, who is basically our version of a Fox News guy, but like on steroids. He racist, misogynist, homophobic, disgusting, like the worst type of person that you can ever imagine. He is probably going to run for president. So it's kind of like, I might not be hanging around here for much longer.
Wow.
I'm thinking about Canada, Trudeau, those dreamy eyes.
They welcome people with open arms. Nice set of hair.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, the USC, we know the USC is coming back in June. It sounds like they're going to be one more event later in the year, too. So another three events this year. I mean, I guess –
Another three in the year total.
So, I don't know. I guess as long as Globo is writing the checks, they're going to still keep coming down here. But
no, I don't think it's economically that it's a problem to people hosting events here. I mean, I don't see that big of a difference.
Sounds like I heard they've already sold like 12,000 tickets. That's solid for a fight night. 12,000 seats. And they got a few more to go. That's solid.
But you got like two big names, though.
You do. All right. So I guess let's get into that real quick. Vitor Belfort versus Kelvin Gastelum. I guess, first of all, did you just like scratch your head when they announced this fight? Like, what the hell?
I think we all did. It was kind of like, well, Gastelum asked for him, right? Right after the press conference. And we later found out that he was pretty much aware that Vitor needed an opponent for here.
Right.
And for him, it makes all the sense in the world. Like, he's going to fight a guy who's not at his prime, who he matches up well against, who's just pretty much a big step up if he does beat Vitor. But for Vitor to take this fight, it's kind of, I don't know. I think we all kind of wondered what will it do for him? Because I feel like a lot of us were thinking is that, well, Vitor, another title run, it's pretty much out of the question at this point. So I would figure that he would take big fights, that he would take Dan Henderson's and things like that, fights that will not necessarily mean anything when it comes to records, but that will draw attention. And then he first was going to face Brunson. And then Gastelum. So it's kind of like, then Anderson fought Brunson.
Tough. True.
And then Jacare is fighting Whitaker. So nothing makes sense anymore in the world.
Well, at least Jacare and Whitaker is like two like ranked people. I mean, Whitaker's on a nice little run.
Yeah,
he's kind of like that name that everybody forgets. And, I don't know if his name necessarily belongs along those top guys right now, but he's on a nice little run. But yeah, this fight's weird. And you're right. For Kelvin Gastelum, it makes all the sense in the world, right? I mean, this is a chance to really get your name over.
Yeah. And if he loses, he can just come back down and, like, nothing happened.
Going to 170 anyway. Yeah. So it makes all the sense in the world for Kelvin, but it doesn't make sense for Vitor. But I respect him, I guess, for taking it. I haven't seen our staff picks yet, but I think pretty much everybody's picking Kelvin,
Everybody
right?
picked Gastelum.
Every single person on
Every
our staff
single
picked
person.
Okay, so, and we've seen, we were looking at the odds earlier this week. He's the biggest favorite on the card.
Yeah.
What about the Brazilian media? What's the conversation? I feel like usually they're pretty realistic about their guys' chances. I remember, for instance, the Maldonado fight with Stipe, where everybody was just like,
Well, but that was kind of an extreme example that you're giving right here.
At least nobody was like, yeah, this could be
but
a great
fight.
But
even when Verdun fought Fedor.
Yeah.
It was kind of like nobody thought Verdun was going to win.
So what's the feeling among among your cohorts here in Brazil?
Honestly, I think that it's kind of – and we were talking about this. It's – I think not a lot of people are like, Gastelum is for sure winning this one.
Right. That's true.
I think it's kind of like everybody's picking him, but like, kind of picking him at the same time. So I get that feeling. And when I ask, and I get asked, because people are like, who's taking this one? It's kind of like, because especially after we saw today how much bigger Vitor looks.
Dude.
It's scary. Like, it's a big difference.
Because we had seen the pictures from the on sale, but those were just provided to us by the UFC. And it, you didn't know, like, were they standing on, like, unlevel ground? Or, like, was the camera in a weird – like, what's going on?
I mean, you get that – there was the video, and you could kind of see that already. But I guess seeing it live is kind of, you know,
pretty nutty.
Has that impact.
And Vitor still – I mean, and I think that's the thing is everybody's breaking it down that it's not – it doesn't take a rocket scientist. It doesn't take a professional MMA journalist to say, you know, Vitor is dangerous in the first round. I mean, right? Like, even – you know, you got Vellante out here as Weidman's buddy saying, you know, this guy's dangerous. I mean, I saw what he did to Weidman in the first round. You know what I mean? Like, he is dangerous early on.
That's the thing. And we know Kelvin is saying things, and people say things to promote fights and stuff like that. So we know that that's the thing that happens. And he's talking about getting a knockout. Like, my one concern would be for him to opening himself up to a situation where he doesn't want to be.
Right.
But I don't think he's going to do that. You know, I think he's a smart guy. He's been able to prove everybody wrong consistently all the time by being clever, you know. So I don't think he's going to be dumb about this one.
You had a chance to talk to Vitor earlier in the week, and I was the cameraman this week. I was doing my best Cold Coffee impersonation, trying to act like I know what I'm doing with the video camera, which I definitely do not. But you know, I will say that you know, Vitor is always very reflective, and of course he's got his cliches, but he's kind of a motivational speaker type guy or whatever, you know, kind of makes you feel, you know, whatever. But I will say, man, you asking him when he's thinking about retirement, of course he's heard it before. I think this is honestly one of the first times I've ever heard him say soon.
So, you know, and remember, then I tried to follow up, and then he didn't really it was a weird moment right there, because he said soon. Like, out of the blue.
Like, maybe it slipped. Like, he didn't mean to say it.
And then when I got back to it, but, like, are you, like, trying to delicately reintroduce the subject? And he just, like, oh, no, I'm feeling okay. I'm fine. Maybe I'll fight the legends and the youngsters. So it's kind of like I was kind of confused.
Yeah.
You know, by the situation. I don't know if the soon was his. It seemed like it was him saying. At first, I thought it was maybe referring to people retiring him.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure that it was him saying
so. I think so, too. I mean,
and he's talking about the second journey. Like, it's something that – it's interesting. I mean, I don't even know how he does it. It's so long. 20 years. I'm 27.
20 years, his UFC debut. That's crazy.
And just – and we know that it's more – it's about more than just fighting. Fighting is easy. It's something that they'll do eventually, but they do every now and then. But it's kind of like the weight – he's never had problems making weight. And we know that his issues with the hormones for whatever reason, but he does have a hormonal imbalance and things like that, and things he has to overcome in training now. And I think why that is besides the point at this point. But, you know, we know that he's been through so much already in his career. And to me, just to keep motivated to do it, like, it's crazy to me.
This has to be, like, a key fight because, I mean, from all indications – he's wealthy, right? I mean, he's not saying like Bill Gates money or whatever, but he's good.
He's set for life, I'm sure.
His wife made a lot of money in her professional career as well, right? I mean,
I don't even know. I don't think so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She was just famous, but not
she
really.
She was really
in on it.
Famous, but I don't really think she capitalized on it.
He seems to have done good. He seems to have invested, and he seems to, you know, like, I don't think he has to fight, but, you know, if he goes out there and loses to Kelvin Gastelum, and I'm not trying to disrespect Kelvin Gastelum, but it's kind of like, you know, had Anderson lost to Brunson. You know, it's like now you're talking about legends losing to guys that, as he said, when I was champion, Kelvin was 4 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, if he loses to Kelvin, maybe that's it or close to it.
It could be it. I don't know. I mean, we never know with him. Like, if he comes out, if he loses and comes out and says, I'm retiring, this is my last fight, I'm not going to be surprised.
Right.
And if he, like, calls out the champion, the heavyweight champion, I'm not going to be surprised. Like, it's Vitor.
That's true.
We've come to expect whatever from him. So, but I totally agree with you. I just think that it's one thing when you lose to Jacare, and it's one thing when you lose to Musashi, and it's one thing when you lose to Jon Jones.
Yeah, you're losing to top five guys.
Yep. And then it's quite different when you lose to a guy who's much smaller than you,
yep,
by the way, who's just coming up again. So it's kind of like, I think a loss there will really make him think.
Would the Anderson fight still be on the table, like, if he lost? I mean, is that a fight people still want to see?
Oh, for sure. I keep saying that. Like, yeah. I don't know what's – somebody – one of the two doesn't want that fight. I can only think that that's
because it would have happened by now if they wanted it.
I mean, I have, like, I will say this. You know me, I never say things, like, very incisively, right. But this one I'll say, you know, I'll be very assertive. This would be a huge fight, no matter how bad they are in their careers. Like, it's not going to be the same,
right.
obviously, but if they do this fight in Brazil, it's a huge deal.
It's interesting because you got, I mean, we're just talking about so many fights ahead, but I mean, if Anderson or if George St. Pierre beats Michael Bisping,
yeah,
you got to think that George wants to fight Anderson, right? That super fight that never happened. Because,
yeah.
I mean, George, if I mean, again, not to take anything away from George St. Pierre, but if he happens to beat Bisping, then you're talking about Jacare, Romero, Weidman. Yeah. Like, those dudes are huge. You know what I mean? Not that Anderson's not, but I think George would probably think that's a, you know, a lesser version of Anderson Silva. This would be the time to fight him.
I don't think anybody wants to fight Romero ever.
No, hell.
Like,
no.
That's the thing. I think that's like the common thread there. Nobody that, you know, has already gotten someplace wants to fight him. Because why? It's just an annoying game, a difficult guy that will annoy you. He won't really give you an opportunity to shine in your fight. He's not going to give you money. He's not a big draw. So
right.
It's kind of like, what do you have to win by beating Yoel Romero? He's the only guy who has anything to win there, you know. And I feel like it's the same situation with Jacare.
Yeah.
Because he's a dangerous opponent.
Incredibly
who
dangerous.
Makes sense for us here in Brazil, but I don't think he's a draw either. So it's kind of like it's a situation where it's a very – you have very little to gain.
Yep.
You know?
I agree. Well, it's interesting. I hate to think – I mean, I never like to write the book on somebody or send somebody out of the sport, but I do feel like this is one of those nights where we might, like – you know, nobody's really thinking about it being Vitor's last fight, but it could turn out to be his last fight. All right. Let's let everybody else weigh in and see what they think. I wanted to play your interview with Vitor Belfort since I didn't really do any interviews this week, which is a big change of pace for me. But, hey, a little change is nice every now and then. So here's Fernanda speaking with the phenom, Vitor Belfort.
So, Vitor, the big thing, 20-year anniversary. How is that for you? How is that just thinking about two decades since you started in the UFC, not even your career altogether. So how is it, that feeling?
It is a tremendous gift from God, you know, to be able to just to perform in a high level and be relevant in the sport. For me, it is amazing. So I was just making some interview and we were talking when I was champion, when I was 19 years old. Calvin was 4 years old, turning five. So. It's pretty cool.
And that was my next question since you brought it up. Gaslam, a much younger opponent. And I think a lot of people were kind of surprised when they announced the matchup because you were coming in from fights against big names. And then again, Gaslam, who's doing well, but still he doesn't really carry the weight of some of your opponents. When did you first hear who Gaslam was about his name? When did you first pay attention to him?
I don't kind of remember, but yeah. he's one of the young guns, you know.
Yeah.
He's for sure. He's pretty relevant still, and I think he's going to have a bright future. But this Saturday is going to be my Saturday.
And you had mentioned that before Brunson was offered.
Was offered, but he turned down.
Yeah.
And then Gasly stepped up.
And you took it, that fight with Brunson.
Yeah.
So at this point for you, it doesn't really matter the weight of the name.
I want to fight guys that are relevant. I just don't want to fight fights that I don't want to pick fights that I have probably because now fighters are picking fights that get probability to win. You know, 40s. Mm-hmm. They almost like become this sport has become not like it used to be before. You know,
yeah.
So now fighters are taking fights that I think I can win this guy. No, this guy is I don't have. So I think I'm the young, the older generation where we want to make the fans happy with fights and fights that brings a challenge and Calvin is a guy who brings the challenge.
You've talked a lot about how your name is already in history. You've done so much already. But coming into this fight on a skid, because you've lost your last two big names, but they were losses. Does that carry any weight for you? Is there anything at stake, or do you feel like there's really not that big of a pressure to win anymore?
It's when you come to mindset, you know, people are very critical about themselves. You know, people today, they live in the past or in the future.
Yeah.
That's a big problem of human nature, you know. So I'm enjoying the moment, you know. Nothing I can do about it, things that happened before. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's gonna keep the same. So the problem with human nature is, like, people are afraid to take risks. Oh, I fail, oh, I'm not going to take risk anymore. No, I fail, I'm taking another risk. What's the difference between fail 3 times, 2 times, 4 times, 5 times, you know? That's if you see history, people that fail the most is the most successful people. So I encourage people to take risk and don't be afraid, you know? Just enjoy life.
How is your mindset since you talked about it? You've been talking about the need to rekindle a flame and just really light that up inside you again.
Because that's the only way you're going to fight. That's the only way you're going to compete. If you have a flame, if you have a fire, if you have a competition in you, that's what makes you a fighter. You know, you cannot try to, you know, a lot of people are trying to become involved with the promotion, with the fame. I don't even thinking about that anymore, because I've been doing this for so long. So, and you see, you know, names are changing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people that do headlines are going to change. But people that have relevant for years and making a headline, that show the constants, you know. I'm a contest, you know, yeah. constant, being a headline. So for me, it's a pleasure. I don't need to become a persona to sell arenas, to sell fights. I am who I am, you know. I make mistakes, I recognize my mistakes, you know. And that's how you live, you know. That's how you connect with people.
But how do you keep motivated for over 20 years?
That's a secret. You know, pretty soon I'm gonna make a book, and you guys buy the book. So
okay.
I'll make a book. How to keep the flame.
Yeah, okay. Do we get signed copies how to keep a flame alive?
It's being written down.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I'm being written down a book about things that makes me who I am, you know. Because people connect with who you are.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're a Muslim, you're a Christian, you're just human beings connect with human beings, you know.
Yeah.
We have the same feelings. You know, I believe that God is the same.
Yeah.
For, you know, God looks, the children are all the same, you know. I have 3 children. They think totally different. I love them the same. So I think it's be connected with human beings, loving people, you know, understanding them and respecting them. That's the most important thing.
And moving forward, I think obviously you're always going to hear that, when are you going to retire? It's a common conversation, but that's what I was going to just ask you, not that, but you've done so much and you've lived through so much.
So my second journey is being already sitting down. I'm creating a new program for fitness for regular people. I want to give back. It's like, how I can give back for people that really, I see human beings like today, they're dying young. They are not living well. They have anxiety. And I want to be able to give back to them. So one of the things I'm doing, I'm creating a new fitness program that we're going to open a blocks of change of gyms. Now open to regular people, and I have a new program. I have gyms, I have different things. I have different idea. I have even one idea I want to present for UFC. It's like creating a new league inside the UFC. We need something new. I can see now these new owners, they want to create something new. It's a lot of changing, but they didn't happen to change that I have in mind. So what I want to propose to them is creating a league inside the UFC, the Legend League. So we can bring back these retired people, bring back to the game and sell more tickets, give more opportunities for they can make more revenue. And of course, when you generate more revenue, you create a more, you know, imagine bringing the legend, bringing, you know, legends like Chuck Liddell or Brian Stann, you know, bring them back. And how you do that, create a new rule. You know, maybe a little big glove, no elbows, no knees, more time to rest, less time to fight. So you create a rules that you can bring back this generation, just like NBA are doing now. They're creating a game with 3 guys in the court. So it's a lot of things can happen. Yeah. And so my second journey is going to be bigger than that, because I have brains, you know, I still have some left. So I want to be able to make the fans happy and give them what they need, you know. Not just entertain them, but give them a pleasure to see legends. I think that's what they love to do, you know. Why just retire them? Bring them back. You know, you can have guys fighting until their 50s. you know?
As long as they're fighting each other, you mean, not fighting
until they are 50 years old, you know, like you create new rules and new regulation, you read the platform. It's already, the octagon is there. So creating a new rule, that would be awesome. I want to see them back.
So your second stage would be just...
Who knows? Who knows? I have brains. Like, you know, I have ideas. I have a lot of people, a lot of things, a lot of projects. This is one of the projects that I have. Why not create this in the UFC, you know? I can lead that. You know, we can make a title fight between me and one of the legends, and that can be a new program in the UFC.
But as it stands, you're fighting younger guys like
Gaslam.
You
can fight both.
Yeah.
Why not?
All right, so that was Vitor Belfort. Not saying it's his last fight, but maybe it is. Fernand, I want to ask you this. The whole Legends League thing, right? Not a new concept. The International Fight League did it. They had Legends. I mean, that was a huge success.
And Vitor himself has been talking about it forever.
Vitor's been talking about it forever. Maybe it was just the mood that I was in. Maybe it was just something going on with that. Maybe it's because I was listening to things differently because I was a cameraman instead of a reporter. I don't know what it was. Because all in all, I'm not going to lie, it sounds like a stupid idea to me, right? Old people fighting, like, you know. You know, it's kind of a weird time in the sport where we know, like, WME, hell, we just had conversations a few hours ago with people here on the ground that were like, yeah, we're kind of struggling right now. We know they need headliners. And it's, I can't believe I'm kind of, now my mood's different. It sounds stupid again. But I don't know, at the moment he said it, I was like, maybe they would do something. Like, I mean, I doubt they would call a whole, like, Legends League or whatever, but... I mean, the point he makes is, like, it's kind of like the Bellator fight with Chael Sonnen and Tito Ortiz. I mean, people cared about it because they're names that people know, and it wasn't a fight that mattered. So, I mean, it still sounds so bizarre, but I kind of wonder, like, is there any validity to it at all that they could bring people back? I mean, I don't even know what Marco Hujas coming back or something. I don't know.
Dude, they talk about it.
I know.
And that's the thing. Like, you hear Ray Sefo talking about how he would come. Like, that's the thing. Like, we tend to think that these guys wouldn't want to go back. But, you know, Mila, I think the idea is ridiculous. But at the same time,
people would tune in.
We see ridiculous things happening all the time. So
fair point there.
No, I mean, I don't like it because it sounds dangerous to me.
Yes.
I don't like the idea of getting Chuck Liddell to come out of whatever it is that he's doing.
Right.
To fight. But at the same time, I think they would be more comfortable with fighting other older people.
And it sounds like he was thinking about it, right? He said, you know, bigger gloves, no elbows. More rest time in between rounds.
That's such an old person thing. Like, less fighting, more rest.
Hold on. Dude. Let me catch my breath. I'm going to kill these people. I don't understand. Whoever the hell keeps ringing the fucking... we're not coming to the door right now. That's all there is to it. Jesus Christ. All right. Throwing me off my game. That's like the fifth time it's wrong in the first segment here. It's insane. Yeah, so at the end of the day, we're just deciding it's crazy.
I mean, a league, it's so hard to even comprehend the concept or just like think logistically how that would happen, you know, and how many people would be up for it, you know, enough to grant a league. I do like the idea that if an older guy is coming back, he's fighting another older guy. But then he said, well, maybe fight.
Well, that's where he lost me, too. It's like he didn't stick to his guns of, like, just old guys fighting old guys. It's like, and then the old guy could fight the young guy champion. They're like, no, that's what we're trying to avoid.
I'm trying to help him out, though. You saw it.
It was funny.
I was kind of like, as long as they're fighting each other, right?
Too funny. All right, let's talk about Kelvin Gastelum. Interesting. He's not cutting weight. But he's not necessarily in the best of moods either.
Oh.
The funny story that – so we're sitting in the press room and we're waiting to do our interview with Kelvin Gastelum. He's got to do a couple before ours. And he's doing a Skype interview. But I guess they set up the computer and they set up the Skype so that they could see him but he couldn't see them, because I guess what they were saying was the bandwidth, you know, cut one side of the video. So he had no idea that
he was being, like, seen.
He's literally,
so he's,
like
– like over the computer, like slouching over the computer, like holding his head, looking bored, That's the like he looked like there was like he would rather be doing anything than be doing that.
And then finally, I don't know what prompted,
I don't know what
like all of a sudden he's
it.
Like, oh
yeah.
Wait, you can see me.
That was it. Like we couldn't hear the. Oh my god, I didn't know. And then they started over. And
they
then he actually
the
gave
over.
Better answers. He I think did. He was kind of like startled by the situation.
That was fantastic.
But it was hilarious.
Now, it's weird because he's not cutting weight, so there's no reason for him to be miserable. And I'm not saying, I mean, he was polite to us and cordial, and the interview you did with them was fine. And he did say, and we watched it firsthand, that, you know, hey, one thing that people might not realize is,
I'm
you know,
stuff in three languages.
I'm doing English interviews, Spanish interviews, and Portuguese interviews. And so that means, like, I'm tripling up on the amount of stuff that I have to do. And
that's
kind
true.
Of interesting.
That's fair because I had never stopped to think about it. Mm-hmm. But then that's the thing. He can do stuff for TV there. Mm-hmm. And obviously they brought Nash. Like, they have the PR people from there. Like,
right.
He's such a big deal that they actually, you know, want to facilitate that. So he's obviously a big deal there. So he's doing all these Skype and phone interviews there. And then he has to do it for the U.S. and then for us. And then he speaks a little Portuguese, so they're making him do interviews.
So his
Portuguese
is pretty good, right?
It's yeah. I mean, he mixes it with Spanish, but it's fine. It's completely understandable. And he started doing the singing thing, and we are suckers for that.
What is that about?
Yeah, because like he made the mistake of letting people know that he liked Wesley Safadão. Wesley Safadão, I can't even – Brazil is not for beginners, guys. I cannot even explain Wesley Safadão. He's a pop artist.
Right.
But he started out at this very regional, like very techie thing, and he grew into a pop phenomenon. But it's kind of like
somehow Kelvin Gastelum was exposed.
And then Gastelum was like, "Oh, I like Wesley Safadão. He sang something." So, and that's like he just won people over because when he was here for the media day, he was in completely different spirits.
Right.
I wasn't here, but I was watching everything, and I talked to him on the
phone.
I think
he gets tense on fight week. Like he, cause
that's also like fair.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you're about to step into a cage with another man trying to knock you unconscious, right?
For sure. And you're not in your country, and you traveled forever, and that was the time too. I think he was sleepy because he said it. He was like, "It's been rough." Like
been
he didn't even
trouble
lie.
To adjusting. Yeah, which I guess, you know, typical of these Brazil shows, that main event, let's see, what time will the main event go off? About 3 in the morning, 2:33 in the morning
yeah,
by the time they watch the cage.
Guys.
So
it's kind of like, you can see, and I liked his honesty because I was like, how has it been? It's like, it's rough. The first day was hell. And he even joked.
I was thinking about pulling out.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. I wasn't. Like, immediately. So, I mean, I get it. I completely get it. Like you said, he was polite, but you could really see his spirits were not, you know,
yeah,
the best. Especially because when I spoke to him on the phone, like, he gave me an amazing interview not that long ago. So it's kind of like you could see the contrast.
Big night for him, man. He beats Vitor Belfort, and he takes a big step forward. It's so... So I'm not gonna. I remember meeting. So when I met Kelvin Gastelum, that was back when we were still allowed to do interviews with the Ultimate Fighter contestants before the season started. And I remember, like, I interviewed the entire cast, and like Kelvin was super nice. But I'm like, this dude has no chance. Like this, like this dude is literally
gonna
be the first guy out of the house. There's no way.
And he knows everybody felt that way. The first time I talked to him, and I asked like, how important was it for him to fight Vitor Belfort, and it's like. It's very important because nobody ever thought I was going to be here. Like, nobody ever thought I was going to be anywhere. I was the last one to be picked. I was like the underdog. I was the underdog again. Like, I kept being underestimated my entire life. So for him, just being here is an achievement in itself. But it's interesting. And I think he knows that. I know he knows that. So it must taste very special for him.
Crazy, crazy. All right, I do want to talk about some of the rest of the car, but I got to get your thoughts on this because it's been kind of funny. We've watched it play out. Big story this week. Steven Morocco speaking with Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson saying, you know, found out that, you know, he was paid less than half of – well, not less than half. He wasn't paid his show money. I guess it was a little less than half of his show money. What we thought, the $250,000 that he was supposed to get for his fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov, and we find out that he probably got a little bit over 100. It's been weird because I've been, like, talking to managers, and, like, there's a lot of rumbling going on right now. I think people are, like, tripping out about this a little bit, that nobody knew you could do that, that UFC could just kind of change the pay. And now everybody's going through the contracts and realizing all this time that we've all just assumed if you make weight and your opponent doesn't make weight, you get your show money. That's not necessarily the case anymore. I think people are kind of freaking out a little bit from the people I've talked to.
But to be perfectly honest, I always thought that was the case. Because, like, they always, like, explicitly said, we're giving him his show money. Mm-hmm. And I always, in my head, it was always like, if it was a contract thing,
why would they even address it?
It would be implied. So, to me, it was always, obviously, I have never read contract. But in my head, looking at it, I always just felt like it was really something extra that they did.
Right.
Something, I'm not going to say nice. The guy spent money. And that's the thing, the little important bit. You spend money. You invest on your camp.
Mm-hmm.
You spend a lot of – you have to pay trainers and managers. You have to pay for traveling. You have to – it's a lot of money. Can you imagine you do that? You invest in your job for like 3 months and then, oh, no pay. We're not going to pay you.
No. It's crazy. That is the hard way. It's such a weird thing because I see both points of view. Like, I definitely see from the UFC because the best I could find out, the when he fought Barbosa in December, Tony Ferguson, he made 50 and 50. So he made $100,000, 50 and 50. He's fought twice since then in places that didn't divulge information, South Dakota and Mexico. So we don't know what he got paid. So I don't know exactly
around
where
it's the same thing.
Around the same. So I'm assuming at this point he's maybe around like 60 70, and 60 yeah. or 70 and 70, somewhere around there, right? So they gave him $100,000. Or a little bit more than $100,000, which from the UFC's point of view, I guess they can say like, hey, man, we feel like we're doing you a solid. And they have an argument. Like, the reason he was getting 250 was because
it was a championship fight.
Championship fight goes away. Now you're getting this amount of money. And I can see that they're kind of – I mean, the UFC definitely lost money. I mean, that was the main event, right? We all said that was the main event. It was gone. So I feel like the UFC feels like they're doing the right thing. But like you're saying, Tony's got to feel like he's getting dicked over. You know what I mean? Like – how's it my fault that this guy didn't make weight?
That's exactly it.
I spent more money. I invested in myself heavier than I ever have in my entire life. And now I get, you know, less than I was expecting. Like, I get it. You're not guaranteed your win bonus because anything can happen in a fight.
Yeah.
But your show money that he thought he was going to get, he thought he was getting that 250.
He was counting on that money to come in. It's a lot of money.
Hell yeah.
And I feel worse for fighters, lower level fighters, because it's money that they're actually going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have a situation like Jessica Andrade, when she said she didn't want to take you on it right away because she needed money to invest in her camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think that because we just, you know, we don't really stop to think about the fact that maybe she just doesn't have the money right now.
That happens.
For that camp.
That happens.
And she needs to fight to make money to invest in that other camp. So it's kind of like we sometimes, I think, overlook the fact that fighters live paycheck to paycheck too. Some guys.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with Ferguson, I'm sure he's doing
probably
fine.
Got a little bit in the bank. He's done pretty well lately.
Yeah.
But still,
I mean, I would think to me that the fair thing would be always pay the show money, whatever the show money was originally agreed to.
I agree.
Now that it's out,
mm-hmm.
I think that they're going to have to do a push to include it in the contract.
That's what I think. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I don't want to sit here and argue who's right, who's wrong, because
yeah.
I can literally see the UFC's point of view, how they're like, hey, man, come on, look what we did for you.
Yeah, like we didn't have to when we're doing it.
Right.
So I
totally see it. But that's where I'm standing. And I think, you know, whether it's the managers like pushing back and saying we've got to get this agreement changed, or even the athletic commission stepping in and being like, let's do this. You know, good friend of both of ours, Alex Davis, he wrote a piece on MMA Junkie recently.
Yeah.
And he's serious about this, man. And I know he's been in contact with a couple of commissions that he kind of wants to, like, you know, obviously we've had all these unification efforts and union efforts and association efforts. And, man, you never know what their motivation is. Alex, I know what his motivation is. And I'm not trying to say I firmly stand behind Alex, but I do know that his intentions are right. It's for things like this. This is something that absolutely has to get fixed, man. I mean, to me, it's like an oversight that we've had for 20 years, and it finally kind of comes out in the open, and you're like, what? And it reminds me of the Mark Hunt thing. Like, the Mark Hunt thing where he's saying, listen, I think if a guy pops positive for drugs, I should get part of his money. Now, Mark's a little bit crazy in saying that I should get all of his money. But if a dude misses weight by 2 pounds, you get 20%.
Exactly.
But he can test positive for steroids and I get zero?
I agree with
that. That is a stupid rule. Yeah. Like, that is dumb. This is shit that needs to get fixed. And I guess that's kind of what I want to talk about, because I got to start things like this that are dumb and need to get fixed. I realize I've got to start making more out of it and keeping it in the front. I think that's my responsibility.
Yeah, but it's
dumb
nice.
Shit that needs to be fixed. I've got to bang the drum a little bit. You know what I mean?
I think that's a responsibility that we should all, you know, take upon ourselves as media people, because at the end of the day, it's people, it's the fighters that need protecting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the UFC that needs protecting. Even when we can understand their reasons and whatever, like, they're the big corporation with all the lawyers and everything, like, and the leverage.
Yes.
They do the shit that they do because they have leverage. They know where they stand. So it's kind of like the people who need protecting are the fighters. But I think that it takes unity to really move something forward in that sense. And I struggle to see how that's going to happen, because it's a lot of egos. It's a lot of people looking out for their own interests.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, and you're going to have a conflict. Just the dynamics of the whole thing, I find it very hard, because then when people come in, they look like they have ulterior motives, mm-hmm. which was the case with the latest association, like, you know, with fighters from the competing agency and like Rebny, like,
right, which everybody feels like he doesn't do business,
like,
right?
What is going on? So it's kind of
it's
like,
gonna be hard. And I've talked to Alex. I was like, dude, look, what you're talking about is a massive undertaking. He gets it, you know. And he was even like, well, maybe I could quit managing and start doing. I'm like, dude, like that's scary.
Yeah.
But something needs to happen. And so I think little stuff like, well, I don't even call it little stuff like this. For 10 years I felt like my job is to just report the news, not to make the news. I'm not supposed to be a part of the news. But I don't know. I guess I kind of like seeing stuff like this and just realizing like it's just dumb and wrong makes me think, no, let's shine a light on that and let's fix this, because this makes no damn sense.
But that's it. But you're still not making the news. You're still reporting, but like you're bringing it to light, you know. And I think that I do believe that we have that responsibility, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of journalists like to hide behind the idea of like, oh, we're impartial or got to hear both sides, or just the whole logic to just be stay away from everything. But I do, at least I don't think it's a must, but I myself feel sort of the responsibility of looking out for the people who are the weakest in any situation. So it's kind of like, I agree with you.
That's well said. I
hope we can see some change in that regard. Honestly, I think the momentum has shifted.
I think so. It does feel that way.
Because they're starting to rebel in their own ways.
They lost, I don't say loyalty. Maybe loyalty is the right word, but with the sale. It's now it's like, no, you know what? We're pushing back now.
Because I think they had a personal thing too.
Yes.
Lorenzo brought a personal factor. Many people dealt with him directly. You know him. Mm-hmm. He's a very nice, polite, and just engaging guy.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of personal magnetism. And a lot of people don't know it because he wasn't in the media that much. But like, whereas Dana has this kind of abrasive, all over the place personality that some people can, you know, jive with, but some people just can't. Lorenzo had this way about him that made you feel heard. I don't know, it seems weird, but I didn't even talk to him that much, but I could kind of pick up on that from him.
He had a presence. The dude commands a room.
Dude, and then
even if you don't know who he is, you have no idea who he is, where like he walks into a room, you're like, that dude's somebody.
That is so it. Can you imagine? So you cultivate that friendship with him, and something goes wrong, and you go, and Lorenzo gives you a call, like, reassuringly. That changes. There is some loyalty to it, I think.
Yep.
And then when you change, you take the human figure out of it, and now you're fighting a corporation, it makes it a lot easier for
you
to, like, rebel.
I agree. I feel like the tide is turning a little bit. I don't know, you know, how far it'll go and how much they'll be able to get done, but that's my vow. That's what I'm realizing now. That's the change I'm going to make within myself. 1 week ahead of my 39th birthday, that'll be my change moving forward as I get older.
That's nice. Yes. I approve.
All right. All right, let's talk about the co-main event, Shogun Hua versus Gian Vellante. Another fight that's kind of weird, but it's just – it's Shogun, you know, the pride great against Gian Vellante, who's awesome.
But that to me makes sense. That's the like, that's weird. There's weird that's just weird,
right.
And there's weird that makes sense. To me, that's it. Because, like, who's Shogun going to fight now?
Yeah.
Like, boring-ass wrestler dude who wants to climb in his career, so he's going to, like, do whatever he needs to do to win.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to, like, make Shogun boring. Like, nobody cares if Shogun wins or loses. Like, that's the thing. I don't think anybody's just, we don't, and I talked to him about it. Well, you couldn't understand it because it was in Portuguese.
Yes, it was in Portuguese. I followed that conversation. I did find out that the word matchup is also used in Portuguese.
By me, anyway. Okay. I lose the words now in Portuguese in my head.
Right.
Because I'm at home every day writing in English. So it's just kind of like, I'm seriously forgetting words. It's ridiculous. But anyway, I was talking to him about this. And I asked, you've reached a stage in which you can afford to not care about losing. You know, mm-hmm. And very, very few guys do that. And I'm not even saying just because of name, but because of style, but because it's a draw, whatever happens.
Yeah.
So he has the luxury of losing.
Absolutely.
You know? So I asked him, and it's like,
it's not like they're going to cut him.
Yeah.
You know?
And his tone was interesting because he was like, no, losing sucks because, you know, it sucks and you spent a lot of, you know, money and you prepare and it's a disappointment because of, like, there's a camp behind it, right? You don't just go up there and fight. But he didn't seem too broken up about it either. He was like, yeah, but, you know, a fighter's got to learn how to lose. Like, if I didn't know how to lose, I wouldn't be here. So it's kind of like,
that's an interesting answer.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, that makes perfect sense. That was a very Shogun answer, and it satisfied me. But it was interesting. It was a quick but nice chat that we had.
Crazy. I think he's only like 35.
He's only 35, and Vellante is 31. and I asked him,
so crazy,
how does it feel to get a guy, you know, who's like almost your age, saying like he grew up watching you? Because Vellante corrected himself when he said that. He was like, no, we're pretty much the same age, but, and he was like, you know, the other day I was walking down the street and this dude who looked older than me was like, hey, I was watching you since you were a kid. It was like, he was the curse one. Like, he's like, now you're just fucking me. It was really, really funny.
This is, I mean, you're right. I guess stylistically, this would be a fun fight. Nobody wants to see Shogun fight a wrestler, right?
Like, don't do it. Why? Like, no, there's no point. Unless you're giving him, like, he goes into this amazing tear and you're giving him a title shot. Which, by the way, it's not even that far if you think about a really shitty division.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks. When you're begging Sirkunov to come back, like, you know you're in trouble in that division.
Yeah, I mean, they're losing people in a division that's already thin to begin with.
It made, honestly, I was really surprised about how shocked people were when he decided to leave. Like,
yeah.
People were, like, super upset about it. They were really broken up about Sirkunov. I'm like, who is Sirkunov? He fought, like, three times.
Yeah.
I like him. I like the guy. He beat Krylov, who I absolutely love for no reason. I don't know. I just carry a very...
Because he's weird. He's
weird. He's
weird.
I love him. Like, he has a special place in my heart.
Yep.
Like, I'm just going to get a Krylov tattoo when Annie gets his Brazil tattoo.
That'd be great.
But so I just think it shows like how thin the division is, because you're suffering the loss of like any scrap of talent, you know. So I'm not even saying that Shogun is, you know, a card out of the deck. I wouldn't imagine that Dan Henderson will fight for the belt when he did, and he did. So
you never know what's gonna happen.
But we want to see him like be Shogun. You know, and I think Vellante is a good matchup because he's not that fast. He's not that, like, that's the thing. Shogun doesn't have his speed anymore.
Have you looked at the odds for this one?
I haven't.
I just pulled him up. I hadn't even looked at him yet. Do you know who's the favorite?
It's Vellante.
Shogun.
It's Shogun?
Yeah, it's very slight. It's almost a pick 'em. Like, it's almost even.
I think I saw it the day. I thought it was Vellante. I thought it was.
Maybe it's switched since it's moved.
How big is it?
Not bad. It's like -140. I mean, it's really, really
that
close.
No, sorry, wrong. That was the one I saw the other day. So
that's crazy to me.
I picked him.
Well, because you're Brazilian.
A lot of our staff picked him.
I don't even remember who I picked.
Because you're Brazilian.
I'm in last place.
I picked Derek Brunson, okay? I earned points forever.
It's a good fight.
I love this fight. I mean, it could be awful. It could be sloppy as fuck, and you're like, oh my god, this is so like, it's bad and good and past bad and good again. Like, it can be awful, but I think I'm very interested.
Vellante likes to brawl, so we'll see if he does it. I mean, I would think he'd still probably try to wrestle a little bit. I mean, I know he's not a wrestler.
So?
Facing Shogun, are you gonna stand there in front of him?
You probably, he's, I think like he could even knock him out or whatever.
Could,
Because, like, Shogun has been knocked out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, but he can be knocked. It's an interesting. And today when we were speaking, and then he was like, well, I'd probably be upset if I get a quick knockout. Like, I want to brawl. No, maybe I wouldn't be upset.
That was funny. Talking to John is always fun. So I actually wanted to play the second part of our conversation that we had. The part where he tells the story about his USADA bust and how he didn't believe what was happening to him because he thought that somebody was fucking with him.
Can you, like, clear up this USADA thing? I mean, you're the guy that's like,
nobody asked me about it.
I'm not taking anything. I mean, you're the guy that I've heard you. You're like, I'm not taking anything, dude. I'm like water and like I don't even think you take Flintstone vitamins or whatever, right? And then you get popped by USADA. All works out okay because you get the retroactive TUE. But, dude, just talk us through that whole experience. What?
Well, it was crazy. After my last fight in Albany, I was pretty sick during the fight. I was had some fluid around my heart. Like, it was, my heart wasn't beating right. I wasn't getting a lot of oxygen in my blood. I was pretty fucked up. Am I allowed to say fucked up? All right, I was pretty messed up. But I had to go to the hospital after the fight and went to a bunch of different doctors, make sure my heart was okay. And they were telling me I had some pretty bad bronchitis. And I had some other things going on, so went to the hospital, and they gave me some inhalers and whatever the hell else they gave me to try to make me feel better. And, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, you sort of realized that, you know, I was really, really, was really sick, and I was in the hospital, and that I needed to take that at that time. So, I mean, they know, like, I've been to the athlete summits and stuff like that. I'm scared to take protein. Like, I won't take any supplements or anything like that because I'm scared that you don't know what's in these things. So I've heard the story of Tim Means, stuff like that. That is some crazy stuff, man. I feel horrible for him that he had to lose almost a year of fighting because his supplement he was taking was tainted, you know? So I'm not gonna mess with no creatine, no protein, or nothing. So, I mean, I take some melatonin to go to sleep, and I always list it exactly which one I take because I'm scared even that might have something in it. You never know with these people. So,
did you panic at all? I mean, did you worry a little bit, or were you like, I know I'm good? Or how'd you feel?
Funny story, actually. I'll tell you the funny story. So, Weidman has this ability to call me. He knows it too. I know it, but so I never know who the hell's calling me. To call me from different numbers. He's got some things. So if you get a phone call, so I'm thinking it's Weidman the whole time. I'm like, yeah, okay, Chris, that's hilarious, blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, no, sir, sorry, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, very funny. And I hung up on the dude. So then they call. They're like, oh, that's very funny that Chris Weidman does this to you, blah, blah, blah. But this is not Chris Weidman. This is so-and-so from your side. I'm like, dude, I don't believe you. Like, stop, bro. Okay, I got to go somewhere, blah, blah. He keeps telling me this and that. He's like, we're sorry, but we're going to get it all taken care of. And he's trying to comfort me at this point. So I'm like, Chris wouldn't be comforting. He's really trying to make me feel worse. So maybe it isn't him. So then I'm like, oh, crap. So I'm telling him, I'm like, oh, I'm starting to get a little bit nervous here, this and that. And he's like, then I'm like, shit, am I not going to be able to fight, blah, blah, blah. And then they tell me they should be able to get it cleared up. You know, I explained the whole story. I was in the hospital, this and that, and they thought I'd be all right. But then I told Chris, and he was dying laughing. He thinking it was the greatest thing in the world. Like, first I tell him I failed a drug test, and he's like, and I'm like, you called me, right? I still think it might be him, like, playing with him. And he's like, no, dude, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, no, I failed. And pretend like I'm all sad. So hopefully he'll tell me that he's kidding. But no, he wasn't. And then I was telling him how I'll be okay and this and that. So, but yeah, it's the funny story about it was I thought it was him the whole time.
So what do you think? I mean, at the end of the day, now that you've gone through this all, like, does it make you feel good that this is going on? Do you feel like, because everybody's trying to debate right now, like, guys like you are dealing with this. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, now that you've gone through this experience, do you feel like, yeah, man, I'm happy? Like, USADA's doing good things, or like, oh my God, you know, like, this is not right. What's your feeling at the end of the day?
I'm certainly happy that they test everyone, and, you know, do I know how many times Shogun got tested for this fight? No. Do, you know, I only got tested, I think, maybe once, maybe twice, you know. I was dealing with that suspension, so maybe that's why I only got tested that. I don't know. I mean, but, so I don't know if people are really getting tested. I don't know if you're in Brazil, if you're getting tested that much, or who's, you know, I don't know what's going on with it, but Yeah, but I'm sure I could find out more knowledge on that stuff if I really wanted to. But I do think they're doing a good job. I appreciate what they do. I mean, I'd much rather have a clean sport. I mean, if it's going to be a dirty sport, then I hope UFC will be in here like the old school WWF and pass us out some steroids so I wouldn't know what to take, you know. But I want to be on the same level playing field is what I'm saying. So I'm hoping, you know, we stay that way. I hope USADA stays around. I do appreciate what they do. You know, I didn't like that it had to come out in the media that I was on something and, you know, an inhaler for my bronchitis. But right away it looks like you're on steroids just and that. But I understand what they're doing, and they got to be fair to everyone else. And I get it. You know, I told them everything like that. So, you know, people were saying I was getting unfair treatment because so good looking, but it was, I don't think it was anything like that. I just think it was, you know, I had a pretty unique case of being in the hospital and having to take medication from that. So, and listing the medication that I was taking, it was just that I didn't get the TUE beforehand, but sick. So, but yeah, I don't think I got any sort of special treatment. I think they treat us all pretty fairly, and I'd like to see them test more. I mean, honestly, just don't wake me up too early. They know, the guy knows who comes and tests me, that I won't answer the door before 10 a.m. So, like, not even close. He'd be out there ringing all day. It's like, you got to buzz into my building. He ain't getting in there, so.
So John Vellante thought Chris Weidman was messing with him.
And he was, it's not just thought, like, he was committed to that idea.
Like, phenomenal.
He was dedicated to that idea. It was amazing.
Phenomenal. Luckily, everything worked out. Again, something that is very interesting, since we're now committing to making social change in the world. That is an interesting, this whole USADA thing, I really do, it's not perfect. No question, it's not perfect. I do feel like it's a move in the right direction. Yeah. It's way better than the Wild West. But the whole thing about, like, you know, people getting named before, like, the whole thing is done. It's weird because you want the transparency, right? I mean, you don't want people hiding things. You
but
know what I mean?
It's not transparent because you don't know the substance.
True, exactly.
You're giving, like, half transparency. And for what? I mean, I get that you're kind of like, we got this guy popped, do this. But, like, I think this creates a guilty until proven innocent mm-hmm. atmosphere.
I do.
And we're so used to thinking he must be using. It's so common, like, the mindset. And a lot of fighters will admit that before it happened to them, they felt the same
right.
way.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, a newspaper printing a, you know, bold headline and then the next day on page 10 putting a retraction.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, no, nobody remembers the little retraction on the bottom of page 10. They remember the bold headline.
It ruined your reputation, you know. It's just kind of like, and that's the thing with, for instance, I think what really opened my eye was the story that I did with Matheus Nicolau. Mm-hmm. Because the first thing that like, really, I mean, you can't trust the eye test when it comes to steroids. But I'm thinking this really young kid who weighs like 4 pounds,
right,
gets popped. Like, why, what is he taking? Like, what is the, like, in my head, I'm like, what are steroids going to do for this kid? This, like, fucking flyweight.
Yep.
Who's 21 or 2, like, mm-hmm. you know, an older guy. Or so I'm, like, in my head, very curious about it. And then I reached out to Eduardo, who happens to be his manager, and he put me in contact with Matheus. And Matheus told me the entire story, and he was not mad at anything. But, like, here's this kid preparing for his fight. He's coming home from training. He opens his laptop, and there's an email from USADA. And 5 minutes after that, it's all over the internet. He doesn't even know what he got popped for.
That's crazy.
They sent a substance that he had no idea what it was.
That's crazy.
So he's researching that, calling people, like, confused about what's happening, and everybody's thinking that the kid popped. You know, I don't like this. I don't like this. I know many people are going to be like, oh, but the person is certainly using. Everybody uses. Everybody's on steroids. And it's kind of like, okay, people like to think that.
All right,
call
Nick
me
Diaz.
Naive. Call me naive.
Right.
But I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, or at least wait until we know what the substance is, or at least give like amounts or something like that.
I mean, yeah, because
it was such a tiny amount of a substance that it gave him the benefit of the doubt.
Because I mean, look, they're not going to fight if they're flagged, right? So I mean, it's not like well, if we don't tell anybody, they might accidentally book them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they know internally.
Yeah.
So he's not going to fight. I kind of agree. Like, let the whole thing play out first.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to stop and think about the BAS process, but I just don't like this scare tactics. And I think it was Frank Mir who brought it up, like, that in the legal system, usually, it's like innocent until proven guilty, and you have all these stances to make sure that you get due process. And for these guys, like, to be able to prove their innocence, it's so much money, too.
That's true, too. That's a part where they don't even talk about. I mean, you got to get your own legal representation.
It's so much money.
That
and a
seems
kid
weird,
like,
too.
Mateos or whatever.
You got
like,
no money.
And people like, oh, because you get emotionally involved. Maybe. But just hearing the story broke my heart because he was about to fight and then he gets sent off. He had to go back home. He was training at Jackson Wink because he didn't have money to stay in the U.S. Because it's freaking expensive to stay in the U.S. So you just kind of like start thinking about the fact that sometimes the guy might be innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. I think it's a concept that most people reject. You know, I think that they usually automatically think this is a lame excuse.
I think you said it right. You said, you know, like, I don't have the whole answer yet. I mean, I feel like now that I'm offering my opinions a little stronger and I'm chasing my, I don't want to be overboard and say, like, I have the answer to everything. I don't have the answer to this yet, but I'll start working on it. But yeah, just I feel like this part of the process is broken. This part is broken. I like USADA's been criticized about a lot of things, and, you know, there's things you can say and whatever, but this part, I think, is bad and needs to be fixed.
It's just you know, give the person a chance, or just before the slandering begins, you know, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're putting out there a message. And like you said, maybe a couple of months later, it's going to come out that they were, you know, innocent or whatever. But then it's still like, even when we write the story, who got flagged by USADA?
Yeah.
Like, Romero, like, even his situation. I don't even know what's up. Like, it was proven that it was a supplement, right? I don't even know what's up.
I know, right? I know.
I don't even know what's up.
All right, big lightweight fight. Edson Barboza versus Beneil Dariush. It's funny, man. This card, it doesn't have the huge star. I mean, I hate to say that with Vitor at the top, but it's not like a championship match or, you know, what the fuck? We had Tony Ferguson versus Habib Nurmagomedov we were supposed to have, and now we're talking about this. But Edson Barboza versus Beneil Dariush, that is a good fight. Edson, maybe, you know, kind of, you know, we haven't done extensive interviews with him this week, but I really feel like when he first came out, I was like, okay, obviously it's striking. I mean, it's amazing. You know, it's, again, it doesn't take an MMA professional to be like, he's got pretty good striking. fun to watch. But, man, I feel like his head's, like, in a different place. Like, I feel like he's grown, he's matured, and not only has his game gotten better, but I feel like his confidence and, like, his just preparation, like, I feel like he's on a different level right
now.
Too.
Was it the last Melendez?
Mm-hmm.
I think that really showed his evolution, like you said, in every aspect. It seems like his head is more in the game than it was before. And he struggled with inconsistency at first. And I think that part of it was just really lack of octagon experience. Mm. Because striking experience, obviously, he's been fighting since he was a child, like a literal child. It was like 7 when he first started fighting.
That's
so it's kind of like, so he knows striking. We have no doubt about that. But I feel like he's finally been able to really connect all the bits of his game. And it's interesting because he's title driven.
Yeah.
You know, and Dariush doesn't seem to give a fuck about
so
the title.
He's like, title, whatever. Whatever happens.
I thought it was so interesting, like, his approach. It was like, I used to be, like, super into getting the belt, and now it's kind of like, you know.
He's obviously, I think he was hinting at religion, because
yeah,
he said, right, I would wear a different crown or whatever. We didn't necessarily push him on that or whatever, but I think he's made it clear he's, you know, his religious beliefs and that sort of thing, which nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, cool, I guess. But I mean, dude, he's right there.
Yeah,
he's literally right there. He's got a nice run. And if he comes in here and beats Edson Barboza,
that will put him like. And that's the thing; it's a complicated division now.
Yeah,
because it's really stacked. But at the same time,
plus, you've always got that wild card Well, like, first of all, we don't know what's going on with Mayweather and McGregor. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like Kevin Lee says it's happening. Kevin Lee said that shit's happening. Just FYI, Motown Phenom says it's happening. I do honestly feel like the tides are turning there. Where I do think McGregor's going to fight Mayweather, which is insane because a year ago I'd have said you're an idiot, you're crazy.
Yeah.
But so that puts things on hold. But then the other thing too is like, as long as McGregor's champ, you always have that wild card of Nate coming in and they just book it just to do, you know what I mean?
Dude,
just to do
the
trilogy just because you want to.
Aldo coming up.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that can really happen.
Yep.
You have Kevin Lee, if he beats Francisco, I don't think right there.
Right.
But like,
yeah, at the time. I can't ever see Connor being like, you know, that Peniel guy, he's really been bugging me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we need to.
Can you imagine the promotion? That would be amazing.
We've got a score to settle.
That would be amazing. Like,
Beniel's
how is
like,
he going to offend Peniel?
We don't have to settle a score. It'll all be settled in heaven one day. You know what I mean? Like, just, I mean, but, dude, if Edson wins, I know he's, you know, a step behind because he had the loss. A loss that he was fighting really well against Tony Ferguson, you know what I mean? So he's like one step below.
And it's lost to Tony Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's right there. And
I think it's right there.
Stylistically, that would be fun. I mean, yeah. I could see people trying to talk Connor into that one, you know what I mean? Because that's not a guy that's going to wrestle you. It's a guy that's going to strike. Edson could wave the flag of Brazil. Like, yes, you beat one of our countrymen. Now it's time for me to, you know. I could see a way to get there, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I think so, too. But it's so hard now for us to even predict anything, especially with the fighters like going up and down divisions like it's no big deal.
So true.
This makes everything so unpredictable because that's it. Like, you're one guy deciding he's no longer a featherweight away from just like completely changing the title picture. I don't know if Aldo would come up to fight, you know, to do a random fight, but like I can see him coming up soon.
Yeah.
I mean, he said it, like, he tried, Dede, like, swears, they tried to book Ferguson and they tried to book Khabib, and both of them turned it down. And
That's
it's funny because people could never accuse Aldo of being scared.
Right.
Because it's like, if you're willing to take on Tony Ferguson and you're Jose Aldo, like.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, it's just a weird matchup for me in my head. And Tony looks massive for me.
Yeah, he is.
You know?
He is.
He's a big guy. And he was saying that he could go down to featherweight.
That's insane.
That is so
I think he walks around at like 190 or something. Which
I read, I think it was Luke Thomas who tweeted that he was on his show and he said that he cut from like 190 or something.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. He's around that size. That's insane. Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, like Mike Bond puts together his Joe Silva shoes and now Sean Shelby shoes. And it's funny because, like, you know what I mean? Because people love to do that. What's next? What's next?
Yeah.
What's next? But it is so weird nowadays because you're like, well, I think a prediction, but maybe George St. Pierre will come back and fight for the middleweight title, you know?
Like, who would have predicted that? You know, it's just crazy. It's really hard for us to even, like, think of landscapes at this point.
It's nuts. All right, Ray Borg versus Jussier Formiga. I love this fight. It's a flyweight fight. I know the flyweight division. It's like I'm wasting my time even talking about it. I love the flyweight division. I think it's great. Ray Borg, young kid, man, really talented. He's had a couple setbacks, but, you know, young and getting better. Formiga, it's funny because I've, you know, I called you know, Formiga's fights out in Tachi Palace, you know, and he was scrawny back then. It's always funny, like he's put on so much muscle during his UFC
like
run, you know.
Buff.
And his, I know Ray Borg was not a fan of Jussier's
boring
jiu-jitsu style, but Jesus Christ, that dude gets
it's
on your stifling. Back and you are in trouble. So
it's like Honey Yahya, you know, like it's not gonna be. And Honey, you actually striking a little bit more as of late, and we've seen it, but it's kind of like Jussier knows how to win fights. That's his main thing. You know, it's not always going to be exciting, but you never count him out. I picked him, but not with a lot of conviction.
That's good fights. I'm telling you, these top ones could
his
also board
was like, he's not going to knock me out. He doesn't have any power. Like, he's just like he's annoyed at the thought of Formiga, clearly.
Hates him.
It's great.
Betch Gohea versus Marion Renault. Women's fight there at 135 pounds. Not really in the title picture or anything right now. I think it's just two fighters that want to, you know, pick up a win and stay relevant. Betch is doing her thing, man. Betch is doing her thing.
She thinks she's in the title picture.
How you know what?
No,
looking back on
right
history,
away, but.
Looking back like throughout history, other than Conor McGregor masterminding his thing, Betch's rise to getting knocked out by Ronda Rousey, but still her rise to getting into a title fight out of literally like hand singles is amazing. The whole four horsewomen thing.
She played that
perfectly.
Perfect.
There were so many contenders that were better than her, and I don't mean that. I don't mean to.
No,
you know,
for she, sure.
She pulled herself into that fight. Probably made a nice little paycheck from it. Obviously, didn't end the way that she wanted it to end, but man, dude, you got to give her credit.
She got. I think like the bad thing for her is just she deals with a lot of hate, you know, because of the way that she talks and just like how bold she is. But
right.
Again, I talked to her and she was like, no, I'm fine with it.
So even down here in Brazil, she gets hate or
oh,
just...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
We're sexist.
Oh, just because they think she should be more ladylike or something?
And like, she's not pretty in Brazilian standards because
right.
we like... Like, they... People like to worship, you know, the foreign-looking
right.
people. So
right.
it was kind of like Ronda would be the ideal of pretty.
That's interesting.
And Betty, like...
So we're judging a fighter by her looks, basically.
Oh, yeah, because that never happened before.
Oh, you heathens down here in Brazil. What's wrong with you? The way you evaluate female fighters
by
their, looks.
By their appearance. Terrible.
That's
yeah.
a shame. I didn't know that. I didn't know that she,
oh,
she got
so
hated like
mean.
That.
Like, I go through her Instagram page and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I'm depressed. It's just mean. People are awful. And... I think she has to have a really thick skin. You know, I talked to her about this. There's gonna be a story up, and because it's even like my headline about facing criticism. Because she was like, sometimes it's hurtful and it's painful, but you know, like, and she says it's a risk that I take because I say things, and I don't think other fighters have that courage sometimes. But
it's true.
I do.
You got to put yourself out there if you want to risk the rewards, right? If it's a, you know, if you want to reap the rewards, I should say, you got to put yourself out there.
Exactly. And she does it, but like it's awful. It's mean. People are mean. And then you see what Cyborg had to read her entire life and what Gabby Garcia had to read her entire life, and it's that to me is like really when people are like, oh, you don't need feminism anymore because the world is great and it's not sexist. Like, yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. It is. And people are shitty, especially on the internet. All right, the main card opens up with Tim Means versus Alex Oliveira, the rematch. How about Tim Means? Well, first of all, I mean, I'm glad they redid this fight because I think that the bottom line is the Nevada State Athletic Commission got it wrong. Here we go. Taking another stand. God damn it.
I'm loving this version of you, John Morgan.
I think the NSAC.
Can support this.
I think the NSAC got it wrong. I think they screwed up that night. I mean, I think it was so confusing on the broadcast. Like, they were saying even Mark Ratner was a little bit confused to the rules.
He
and
was.
They were just.
Yeah, that's
so,
what I read.
So it was confusing.
He said, and Joe Rogan, when he interviewed him, when we were just watching mm-hmm. it, he said it was legal. Like, he really put teammates in a situation in which he felt. Right. That's
right.
what he said today. He was
exactly.
like, I would have felt like – I would have admitted I was an idiot.
Yeah.
Like if I was alone. But I heard a lot of people saying that I was right. So it was kind of like an overall confusion. And I actually saw it on Twitter because that's the thing. You were probably doing play-by-play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can't really follow the noise.
Exactly.
But I was like checking on Twitter all the time. And you could see people like going kind of back and forth about it.
Like trying to figure out what was right, what was wrong.
You
well,
know.
I love the fact that we talked to Tim Means today and asked him about it, and he just manned up and said, DQ me.
Yep.
Clearly,
yeah,
I threw the tent.
He's asking for you to be a disqualification. And it's like, yeah, absolutely. How do you feel about it? Do you think that's fair? Absolutely.
It's phenomenal. This is a short little clip, but it's I think it deserves to be heard because Tim Means really impressed me here.
Tim, right after the first fight, Alex was like pretty quick to ask for the rematch right away. How did you feel like after it ended? Were you interested in that rematch?
Oh yeah, we have unfinished business, so I think it was a good thing for him to ask for it. I think it's kind of crazy he wants it here in his hometown. So you know, we're gonna start off where we left off.
What do you mean by kind of crazy?
You know, it was a fight that he was losing, so you know. He was supposed to out-wrestle me and out-grapple me, and it wasn't working for him. You know, we grabbed a hold of each other, and I was a stronger fighter. So I don't know how he expects to win in front of his friends and family, and I expect to put him down in front of his friends and family.
Yeah, later after everything was done, you admitted that it was an illegal knee because you didn't really know that it was illegal. And he's appealing it to turn it into a disqualification. How do you think about that? Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how they called it accidental. I misconstrued the rules when we're breaking them down in the back where we have to have this 3 points of contact or hand down and all that. I've never read the rule until that night because I've been in the rules meetings and we always break it down. If you're on a knee, you have to have a hand down. I think that's where the gray area began. We always talk about a hand down. It's anything other than your two soles. And I never thought I had to read the rules since I've been in the rules meetings, you know. So I saw his hands up. I saw him trying to defend my knee. So he thought a knee was coming as well. And then when I got in the back, there was fighters that also were confused on it. There was a lot. There was a big gray area. So I would take more responsibility on myself, call myself a dumbass if it was only me that thought that the knee was legal. But there was a whole bunch of confusion behind it. And, you know, I saw his hands up. I saw he was trying to stand up, and I threw a knee. So didn't try to hurt him or cheat in any way, but I did try to take him out. So
I mean, just to clarify, are you saying that if they did call it a disqualification, you'd be okay with that?
Absolutely. If we're following the rules, we're following the rules, you know. And accidental, they're playing with my intelligence, you know. So I threw a knee on purpose because I thought it was completely legal. So, you know, give the dude the DQ.
And before that, you mentioned that you felt you were winning, but you didn't really have that much time in there with him. How did you, from that short time that you guys spent in there, how did you feel? Like, did anything surprise you, or is there any, how did you prepare for this rematch based on that short time?
I thought a lot went down. In our 3 minutes, there was more in our 3 minute fight than in the five round championship fight the other night. So, you know, I thought a lot went down. You know, he put me on my ass when I was trying to fix my clothing because my shorts were too big. Forgot to have them fitted or whatever. So I was fixing my shorts when he threw a spin kick. But that's all he has, you know. He has that speed, and that started slowing down for him. I'm a pressure fighter, and I break guys with pace. So that's about all that went down in the fight for him, you know. I was winning the wrestling and the grappling exchanges, and I'm going to do just that again.
And the last one for me, after the fight too, you sort of like called out the media there a little bit. What was that about? Is what is a specific thing or?
You know, man, the media keeps saying that I'm only a grappler, and that's again my fault, or I'm only a striker. That's again my fault. So I need to show a little bit more of an all-around skill set. And I was just kind of pissed off, so I didn't want nobody to be happy that night. I want everybody to be pissed, and so, you know, I was talking trash. You know, I like the media. You know, I meet a lot of cool guys through that or whatever, but, you know, I want everybody to be pissed. So I tried to start the night off right. If you watch my fights, I start the show, you know. So other guys don't know how to get people involved, you know what I mean? And, you know, I might not have the fans like Conor McGregor and those guys do, but give me an opportunity to talk, and I'll wow you.
All right, so Tim Means, I love it, man. Much respect to anybody that'll just man up and be like, you know, or woman up. They'll just say, you know, like, hey, I was wrong.
I was whatever.
I thought it was off. I thought it was cool. But here's me taking my stand. I don't get it. You know, Alex Davis, again, not hiding. We're friends. I mean, it's great.
Really?
Yes, I know. So
you too?
I know.
I would
shocking.
Have never known.
He's his manager. He's Cowboy's manager, and he filed an appeal. And the commission's just not even getting back to him. Like, they're not even answering his emails. Yeah. And I actually reached out to Bob Bennett last week, and I was like, hey, I just wanted to follow up on this. Like, because I hadn't even spoken to Alex, but it just in my head, I'm like, hey, we're going down there. They're doing the rematch. This will be a good time for a story. Yeah. What's the status? And Bob was just like, yeah, no comment at this time. I'm like, what?
So why now you've got. Why are they putting up such a fight with this?
Every time I've ever seen and I've seen a bunch of appeals, right? And every time they never change anything, because basically at the end of the day they go, well, you know, the commission wants to support their referees, and I can respect that. Like, they don't want to embarrass their referee.
But the referee makes mistakes.
That's it. And that doesn't mean the referee sucks. That doesn't mean he's bad.
He's human.
Especially right now where – do you know what set of rules we're using this week, by the way?
I have no idea.
Exactly. We're using the old ones, by the way. We'll use the new ones next week in London. People don't even know – like, right now with this transitionary period between the rules, like, commissions don't even know what – it's just – it's bizarre. People are going to make mistakes. People make mistakes.
That's it.
That doesn't mean the referee sucks.
But that's like – the Brazilian commission might be a clusterfuck, but they're, like, really good about
– I will say that. They have done some great things. So I just wish –
they
Nevada
do have
step
extra
up here.
Bad refs, though. So
right. So that kind of makes up for it. Like, we got a bunch of them. So that's why we have to
like,
do stuff.
This decision was so outlandishly ridiculous that it made it very easy for us to overturn it. But
it was Dan Mirgliotta in the cage that night. Dan is a phenomenal referee. He's a fantastic referee.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. He has all the best intentions.
he made a mistake.
He made a mistake.
It happens. Let's all move on with our lives.
Seems like a common sense solution.
But yeah, that to me is just kind of like very old-timey. Like, it's a very old-timey way of thinking.
Right.
You know, just kind of like, we got to protect this. We got to look good here. Like, you're really holding on to your little thing there. And it's, to me, that's like, probably, I bet that it's just like a bunch of old men running that shit.
All right, now we're getting into the sexism.
No, I'm not. It's not. It doesn't have to do with that. I'm just meaning that, you know, it's a very, usually when there's this kind of structure.
Just the good old boys network, as we like to say, you know.
Things are run a certain way. And then a lot of the times when you ask why are they run like this, the answer is basically because it's
because that's the way it is.
That's wrong. Way forever.
Yeah, and that's not right. I don't know. I think they should fix this, man. You got the guy. The thing was ruled. I mean, think about this. Think about how stupid this is. The ruling is he accidentally threw the knee unintentionally, right? It was unintentional to the head, to the knee, to a grounded opponent.
Yeah.
You've got the guy that threw the knee saying, it was intentional.
Like, don't insult my intelligence. Like, if I'm saying I meant to do it, Like, I'm sure if Alex goes, like, would you mind walking with me to the commission? Knees would probably be like, sure.
Absolutely.
Why not? I'm not doing anything today.
So ridiculous. All right. Sneaky good card continues. Kevin Lee, the Motown phenom, versus Francisco Trinaldo.
That's a really good
fight. It's a really good fight. You know, Kevin Lee, he's had a couple setbacks along the way, but he's a top prospect, and I think he's getting better. I mean, people have had their eye on him for a while. Meanwhile, Francisco Trinaldo, maybe if you're not a big, you know, if you don't watch all the Brazilian cards, you might not know him because he's fought almost exclusively here in Brazil.
Yeah.
But the guy is good. He's tough as nails. There's no way he's whatever his age says he is. He's got to be like 10 years older than that. But he's super tough, man. He's like, you know, he gets tired. That's the fair drawback, is that sometimes he gasses a little bit, but grinding style, man. His wrestling is tough. His striking, I think, is underrated, man. He's actually, you know, pretty decent at that. This is a good clash of styles. And, man, you know, Kevin Lee, potential future star, but this is a tough fighter. And Trinaldo is like the dude that just won't go away.
And that was pretty much what we were saying, because, like, I think he just snuck up on everyone, mm-hmm. right? Like, once we looked at it, it was like, He has a bunch of wins.
How the hell did he get 8 in a row or whatever? You know, it's like 7 in a row. It's
because
insane.
At first, when he came out on Tough, the thing that he had was he hit really hard.
Right.
So that was his thing.
Right.
Like, he has.
He's just a big, powerful dude.
But he gassed out.
Right.
So it was very clear once he started his UFC run to everyone. I think everybody was just kind of like, this gimmick is going to get old.
Right.
And, you know,
he's a one-trick pony, and he's not a young guy. He's
exactly.
He does have the folk hero stuff working for him, which is awesome. You know, he's got an incredible backstory of coming from absolute nothing to being where he is. And
he's like this guy, like, with the heart of gold, who's unintentionally hilarious, like, or intentionally. I don't even know. He's just funny. Like, his interviews are hilarious. He's a funny guy.
Did he, like, throw a birthday party for his hometown for all the kids or whatever? Because he never had parties.
Because he didn't have parties. So he bought, like, and he sent pictures.
What the fuck is that, man? How amazing is that?
Dude, it was just, like, the fucking poorest little town. You know, like, you see the pictures and it was just sad. Just how, you know, you see how really little that they had. And he's just that. Like, remember when he last won and he was, like, talking about, like, he was super emotional about how he's becoming a dad and mm-hmm. he wants to be the best father in the world. Like, even that, like, and it's just so genuine. It just comes from him. So you want to root for him, but at the same time, you're kind of, like, constantly counting him out, you know? I think Kevin Lee is going to be the one to end that streak.
Right.
Because they just, for the reasons that Kevin Lee pointed out himself, you know. Masahiro Nobu has always found a way to win here and there, but I think Kevin is one step above and just a little more savvy than the people who fought Masahiro Nobu.
It's funny, man. Kevin Lee really does look like the real deal, man. He looks like a real talent. The loss, and I mean, you talked about it, and he kind of, you know, put it aside. I mean, the loss to Leo Santos, man, that was, first of all, it was just like, okay, you might lose to Leo Santos, but you're not going to get knocked out by him.
Oh, like, so that was like, I remember, everyone's reaction to that was pretty much, what just happened? Like, he hadn't knocked out a person since, I don't know, I was 4. Like, I don't even remember. I think he only had, like, one knockout, and it had been forever. So it's just, nobody was expecting it to happen. And it really was a halt in momentum for Kevin. And as we were saying, he needs to put that in the back of his head and not let it, like, ruin his life. But it really was a big loss, like, when you think about it. But he started rebuilding his momentum. He's, what, 3-0 since? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think a win here really, really puts him in the scene again. And he's a really marketable guy that could really, you know, with a little bit of a push, I think
definitely
he could be a good one.
Definitely. A couple other fun fights. I mean, Joe Soto versus Hany Yahya, two, like, really
good
grapplers.
That's a really good fight.
It's a great fight right there. You know, not necessarily title implications right now, but just stylistically, it could be a lot of fun. Crazy to see Josh Berkman back here. Michelle Prezeris, dangerous, tough dude.
I had
sometimes
totally
not fun.
Forgotten about that fight.
Sometimes not fun to watch, but tough as nails. But the one that
is the worst to watch.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Jeez, Fernanda, tell us how you really feel.
His fights are boring. I'm sorry. But the one that's I kind of wasn't really looking forward to, and the more I talk to people this week is Sergio Moraes versus Davi Ramos. Everybody is like,
that's an amazing fight.
Because in my head, I'm like, okay, I know Ramos is a jiu-jitsu guy. But so Sergio, obviously Serginho's a beast, and Davi is a lower, you know, a lower weight class that's fighting up because he's taking this on short notice. So in my head, I'm like, eh, it could be fun. But I'm telling you, since we got here on the ground, like,
everybody's
like, bro.
He's a grappling beast.
Bro, you can't wait till you see this guy. Wait till you see this guy. So I'm looking forward to that. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, there's so many fights that we wish, you know, like, two jiu-jitsu guys would just, like, really get down to do jiu-jitsu, and then they end up, you know, striking or whatever.
Yeah, so
kinda
let's
two
not
wrestlers.
Get our hopes up.
So, yeah, let's not. But, oh, man, after hearing everything that I'm hearing, like, I'm just hoping, like, maybe they just, like, both go down to knees and, like, slap hands and just, you know, like, just get on the ground and do it.
You talked about title implications. Just wanted to get back on that. Hany Yahya is a guy who's racking up a bunch of wins.
He is. He's one of those guys that I think also is a little slow to get respect because his fighting style is so weird.
And he knows it.
Yeah.
And
but he knows. He's like, that's what makes me me.
But then he's like, he's frustrated by it, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. I had a really good chat with him a while back about, because he started, like, pushing himself. He was like, I want to do more media. I want to be, like, in the spotlight a little more. And he is frustrated about the fact that he seems to be always, like, under the radar.
But he self-manages, too, right? Like, that is that why he feels like he's...
Yeah, he was like... It was really hard to get a hold of him. Like, he didn't have a cell phone until, like, 2 weeks ago. So it's kind of like...
I want to do more interviews.
And he's crazy.
How do you reach you?
I don't know. To him. He's, like, he's super kooky. I love him. Like,
yeah,
we developed a very good relationship. Like, we're from Brasilia, both of us. So we'll sit down and talk about it. And we talk about personal stuff. We talk about everything. He's a really nice guy. But he's kind of like, meh. So, but he's one that he's... Racking up the wins, man.
I'm telling you, man. Fun little fights. In the fight pass prelims, we did lose Godofredo de Pepe. What happened there? Do you remember? It was both of them?
He was, no.
It was happened while I was flying here, so I never even got to read the story. I was flying here.
It was an orbital injury.
He ordered? Oh, wow, that sucks.
Pepe, yeah. He got an injury in training and just couldn't. Doctor's orders couldn't go on.
Yeah, you can't mess around with that. But we still get Honey Jason.
Who is he fighting?
Jeremy Kennedy.
Oh, true.
So
the Canadian guy?
Yeah, we'll get that on there. And then Gareth McClellan, the Soldier of God, versus Paulo Borrachinha.
Borrachinha. Oh, that was a Twitter argument about it that was hilarious. Because Zane Simon, he was like, is Borrachinha like little, what was it, little condom or a little?
You know what? I saw that. Like little drunk. Because borracho in Spanish.
In Spanish. But I heard that in Portuguese. So this guy from Portugal said that it was also in Portuguese. From Portugal, they use it.
Huh. But not here.
But not here. Here it's, I'd never heard of it. And
so
apparently
what you decide he means, so it means little rubber?
Little rubber because his brother is just rubber. So he's the little rubber because apparently his brother was super flexible and Borrachinha is apparently flexible too.
So many jokes to make there, but we'll just leave it at that.
But I thought it was hilarious. Then I found a new word because Borracha apparently is also a slang for weed, like good weed.
Good weed is rubber?
I had no idea. And anything can be weed, right? Like,
yeah.
If you say with the right...
Yeah, right.
Like, penis and vagina and weed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you say it the right way, people know what you're referring to. But I had never heard it, so
There you go. Thank you, Boaxinha, for all the knowledge that you brought upon me.
All right. Well, that sets the table. We have actually, it's a relatively early period in the night. I would like to go have a few frosty beverages and get a little bit of sleep. I slept like 90 minutes last night. For whatever reason, I could not fall asleep. I'm dying. I need to get some sleep tonight. We will have the early weigh-ins at 9 a.m. in the morning, the afternoon weigh-ins, and then fights on Saturday, late night, Saturday night.
Yep. Yeah, another. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I don't like the cards. I don't like the. I mean, for me, it's the same when I'm working from
home.
Sure,
because it's the same hours. Yeah, so you're doing it.
I hate it. I hate it when it's 2 a.m. and I'm like dying and I really want to pay attention, but my brain is just not with me anymore. Some people get over that like more easily. I struggle.
Right.
But it is what it is. Such is life. And actually, like you said, I think it's a pretty sneaky card.
I think we could have fun. I think it's funny because Fortaleza last time was so fun.
The matchups are really good.
It'd be wild if we end up getting something like that crazy. Yeah, the matchups are fun. So, yeah. All right. Well, Cole Coffey again, he's going to edit this all together, and then he's going to go to vacation. He's going to London, by the way, for vacation, and then leaving before the fight start.
That's Jackass, how badly he wants
Jackass
to avoid
scheduled
it.
A vacation that screwed him out of 2 fight weeks. Bastard. Bastard. Well, we're going to hook up over there. My birthday actually next Wednesday, I think, it was when I landed, March 15th. I'll be 39 years old, inching up on 40. Jesus Christ, where does the time go? Yeah, I'm going to go drink to that. Meantime, thanks for listening.